eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome back to Eat, Drink, Talk. I'm Steve Coombs, and my co-host, Rick Redding, is with me in the studio today.
Right over here, on the left.
Divided by the sea of glass. It's like a three-foot-wide, wonderful table provided by Dan Vonderhaat for us to lie our books across.
So if we get mad,
we can bang the table.
Bang the table slowly.
But you people signed up, or at least showed up, to listen to us talk about what we ate over the tables at various restaurants in town, right? Not our accommodations in the studio.
And a great week. It's amazing we're not like 400 pounds.
That's because we exercise afterward, right? Yeah. Don't we?
Oh, right.
Oh, wink, yeah. Wink. Exactly. Yeah, we need that for the video podcast of Eat, Drink, Talk to see all the wink, wink, and sarcasm going on. Let's just jump right into the news, Rick, because yet, of course, you know, we start with openings, it seems. And Ed Lee told Business First last week that he's got a new restaurant planned for Louisville, and he hopes to open it by the end of the year. No name, no concept identified as of yet.
I know. I think maybe you ought to get him on the show and ask him that question.
Well, yeah, I would love to. Ed has not returned my calls in quite a while. He'll occasionally email me back, but it's just a couple of things I wrote about. You know, some of his ventures with KFC, I think, have never really settled well with him.
Oh, I guess I need to do that one then.
Yeah, maybe you would do that. But, you know, and I'm also hearing some street talk that the story did not really represent what he said well. So whether that means he's going to be opening up later than the end of the year, I don't know how any restaurateur as busy as he is, you know, with two places here. He's got two restaurants. Well, he's got one outside of Baltimore called Succotash. He's got another one opening up in Washington, D.C. I'm not sure how he could have time for the fourth here or even get it open starting here in August. But
busy guy.
Busy guy, successful guy, and whatever he opens, I'm sure is going to be good. So we look forward to it nonetheless.
There you go. All right. You had a nice night out at a place I went on opening night, Germantown Craft House, on Saturday. And how was the food?
Well, my favorite thing I had was the sausage sauerkraut balls. Sounds crazy. Sounds kind of weird, right?
Not something,
right?
I would order.
Exactly. Just the name alone. I mean, it didn't have a cool name to it, to, you know, to kind of overcome sausage sauerkraut. Fantastic, though. A great appetizer. Rest of the meal was okay. You know, they're struggling in that area, but the service was great. The beer's great. But at the very least, if you have time, go see this beautiful restaurant. It is so cool. And so, as we were talking about before we came on, the decor in this and design is just, it's otherworldly for Germantown, isn't it?
I think you'd expect to see it somewhere else, if not downtown, maybe in a big city,
yeah.
You know, an Atlanta type place.
Yeah, I mean, so. Just mean the glass ceiling, the, you know, the outdoor patio. It just, I don't have any architectural vocabulary to describe it, but it's just very pretty and much more. It is pretty as the first one. Its sister restaurant, Crescent Hill Craft House, is. This one's even better. So
right, there's plenty of seats at the bar. Unfortunately, I went on opening night and there weren't any seats available, and so we went across the street to the Four Pegs, but. I do plan to go back. I got to go back.
I mean, so, and we were talking too, within what, 100 feet of each other, you have Four Pegs,
yeah.
The Post, Germantown Craft House, and The Pearl.
The Pearl, which you've been to as well.
Went there also Saturday night. What a cool place. You know, and the turn.
$6 old fashioned?
$6 old fashioned.
Wow.
It was excellent. Now, granted, it was a 1.5 ounce pour, which is what they're supposed to be pouring anyway, not like a 2 ounce pour. So that was the only shortcoming. But for $6, you know, yeah. What I'll probably do next time is, well, not have two of them, but buy one and get a shot of whiskey to add to it.
There,
because the shot's probably, you know, whatever they use, probably $3, $4. But it's such a cool neighborhood bar. The term dive bar got thrown around early on, and I think I'm fully convinced that neighborhood bar is much more fair, because dive bar is like biker bar.
After it has work. A little bit of a negative,
yes.
Positive connotation. But
I would think so.
But, yeah, we used it in a headline on eDrinkTalk.net. So
can we go back and change that? I don't think Google would like that at this point. But if you like 70s kitsch, you got to go see this bar. And it's just very relaxed. It's not some hipster bar yet. Who knows? if it'll turn into that. But congratulations to Larry Rice and Susie Hoyt for putting that together. And Germantowners are going to love it, I'm sure.
Well, let's talk about the road. I mean, we both had some experiences on the road with food and drink, but you, fortunately, always do a little better than me and got to go to New York.
I did get to go to New York for the first time in 6 years. I'd probably been there 15 times, and it was way too long a gap for me to not go to the city. And it every time I go up, it's more beautiful than ever. It's cleaner than ever, but it is more crowded than ever. It's, you know, there are no crazy cab rides anymore in Manhattan because they can't get enough speed up because it's just bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper the whole time. But I love the city, and fortunately, my hosts were very gracious and took me to two legendary restaurants, one of which is Gramercy Tavern and the other which is Café Boulud, both places that I couldn't afford to eat in, probably.
Yeah. Is the food better when somebody else is paying for it?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it's much better. But, you know, I have to say that the quality of the food was fantastic, and there are several restaurants in the city that could match that quality of food. However, service was off the charts. Mm-hmm. Corbett's, Oak Room, the English Grill, it's that level of places, maybe even a little bit more because the wine lists were incredible and the knowledge of the servers and everything. It's great. I love that kind of experience where you're not even looking and you just see these hands appear around your sides and change your forks and knives and plates. And but I got a peek into the kitchen at Gramercy Tavern, and there must have been 20 cooks in there.
Wow.
That's like three restaurants for the cooks in Louisville. I mean, so you get a place like that, probably does $7 or $8 million a year in business at least. They can afford it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's the thing. If you're providing that kind of service, I guess you can afford to hire the best people and pay them well.
Absolutely. So so what about your eating? You got to go to Michigan.
Well, I went to Michigan for a family wedding. Paula's, what was it? Her niece got married.
And who's Paula?
Paula, my girlfriend.
That's right. I have you qualify that.
There you go. Kind of fill everybody in. Over at Rusty Satellite, I mention Paula all the time. And so... We had a blast up there. We had a couple of great eating experiences. I got to go to Comerica Park, home of the Tigers, where they lost to the Mets 3-1. But what a great park!
You know, beautiful,
outstanding.
Did they raise Tiger Stadium eventually, is it just historic? It's right across the street.
Yeah, it's not there. I tell you, the Ford Field is like right next door, and it's just
that's where the Lions play, right?
Downtown in Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish we could have stayed and had a meal instead. I had a big old Italian sausage with pepper and onions on it.
That's a meal, baby. That's a great meal.
That was pretty good.
Are you kidding?
So that was great. I guess the other thing I would want to mention for folks around here would be my trip to Perry Park, Kentucky, which is off the road a bit and near Carrollton, and just old-fashioned, out in the country. Like, there is not a fast food restaurant within 15 miles.
Right.
And they serve, they you know, when you have a dinner reservation, they put your name on the table and on a little card, and you show up, and they...
Ain't that fancy.
They know who you are. is... You know, buffet style, nothing fancy, nothing exceptional in the food, like fried chicken and stuff, but tremendous price. We had stayed overnight, a buffet dinner, and a buffet breakfast for $65 for two.
And that wasn't the eating. That was the sleeping as well, right?
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
Were they just kind of filling a gap? I mean, did they not have a lot of traffic right now? And they said, come on in.
I don't know what the regular prices are. We just showed up and asked, hey, could we stay? And
it's about double that, yeah.
And they said, we'll make your dinner reservations. Just go down there, and they'll be ready for you.
Okay, then.
Okay.
Yep, nice. We'll be there. Did you play any golf there?
We did. We played some golf. And the amazing thing about Perry Park, we'll get off this, but... I saw at dusk after dinner, we walked out on the fairways and over three holes lined fairways, we saw more than 50 deer like at one time. They just come out and the place is...
It's like a Santa Claus reindeer audition or something
really
there.
So. We look out there and say, what are all these deer doing out here? And it's not like, you know, usually you see one or two and they scurry off into the woods.
Did you try to hit them with a golf ball? No, that was after dinner. That's
after
all right.
Dinner.
Yeah.
They were just out there, and we didn't see any while we were playing. So
they'd have been in danger where I swing in, I'm sure. Yes. So somebody would have been bruised.
So anyway, we got we did all that and got back, and you know, here we are.
So, what was your fantastic sausage sandwich at Comerica Park your favorite eat? Sounds great.
Well, you know, it's a tough call. They had some great meals associated with the wedding.
Oh, nice. Greeks, right? Greek family?
Greek family. Yeah. And oh, went to this place. I sent you a picture from the bar I was at. It's called Zingerman's up there in Michigan.
Famous place.
And a lot of selection there. They had a buffet-style family dinner for like probably 30 people. And really enjoyed it. It was like pulled pork and...
For a Greek wedding? It wasn't lamb?
Well, this was the rehearsal dinner.
Oh, the rehearsal dinner. Must have been some Southerners in there or something.
Yeah, there were. So the sit-down dinner the next night for the wedding. I mean, we got really treated fantastically by the host. And
nice.
I don't want to know how much the wedding cost. And I said, thank you again that I don't have daughters.
So, I mean, what was it? The wedding, was it like a whole? Was it like my big fat Greek wedding? That
it
fantastic
was a lot.
Movie?
I've never been to a Greek Orthodox wedding, and they had a lot of.
Wasn't a short ceremony, was it?
No, the voodoo that you do, you know, that kind of thing, and mumbling in different languages and
Greek.
Yeah, Greek. So I didn't ask any questions. I just sat there, and they told me when it was over.
They make you drink ouzo.
Ouzo was on the menu there. I think I passed at the wedding night thing, but Paula had a few.
Ouzo, you know why it's called ouzo?
I couldn't remember having them the next day.
You know why they call it ouzo, right?
No,
because when you sip it, that's your reaction. Ouzo. I don't like that licorice liqueur. It's good to cook with, though.
Yeah, there you go.
So my favorite eats were, or was, I should say, a whole Colombian sea bass at Cafe Balut. So this thing comes out on the plate. And
I see all the ingredients there. It's quite a production.
Well, yeah, I'd say I just copied it off the web because I certainly didn't remember the details. All I know is I was telling my sister who, I said, you would have cringed if you'd have seen that because it was head on, tail on. It was everything. Oh. It was ugly, but it was maybe the best cooked fish I've ever eaten in my life. And it tasted like seafood as opposed to, you know, some, you know, cloak of sauce and spice. And it was absolutely delicious. So it was a treat to maul that poor fish. It's not a pretty process to break down a fish on your plate with a fork.
When you got that eye looking back at you, I guess it's takes a certain
his were crusted ability. Over okay. through as a result of
put
his
some
trip
flour on top.
Yeah, he got to swim one more time, but it was in the fryer. Didn't work out so hot for him, but for me it was dreamy. So what about your favorite drinks? You said there were a bunch of brew pubs up in Michigan, or breweries.
Yeah, you know, it's not just in Louisville. I think it's all over the country. There's this explosion in brew pubs. I know I've read about one coming to Louisville soon called Mile Wide, and we're going to be covering that extensively. But while I was in Michigan, I thought I'd drink a Michigan beer, the Oberon Brewery up there. And the Oberon Ale is...
Bell's, actually.
Yeah.
The brewery.
Yeah, it's Bell's. And... it was great, you know. It's me. I like a certain type of beer and tried something new and different.
Well, excellent. Rick, years ago when I met Rick, we were talking about favorite beers, and I said, "What's your favorite beer, Rick?" And he said, "The one in my hand." So he's really branching out these days.
Yeah, or the next one is the other answer. Yeah. What are you gonna have?
It's the most wonderful time of the beer.
I know, and you again have a. A favorite drink that is a description that's three lines long. So,
well, you know, that's for my memory more so than your notes. I got to go to Nashville last week for a trade show event, and right next to where we were was the Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, which makes Bellmead Bourbon. And I did a tour there real quick with Andy Nelson, who is the fifth generation distiller at that place, and they had a fantastic bourbon that was aged in sherry cask. It was about a 9-year-old bourbon, and it was delightful. But I thought, well, maybe that'll be my lovely parting souvenir. And then I saw the price on it in the gift shop, and it was $79. And I think I've had enough. That taste, that free taste from Andy, will take care of me.
Yeah, we're so cheap, but still managed to taste these expensive.
Oh, you know, it's a tour. I had to do it. You know, when in Nashville, you know, go sip some Bellmead. So, yeah, it was great. So, our show guests, we got some good ones this week. Tell me about yours, Rick.
Well, Jeff Stumm is, this is a story that It's not about a chef or a restaurateur, but an interesting part of the business, I think. Spicewood Branding, if you are familiar with that company, they are behind a bunch of products that they brought to market. They do sort of a marketing branding program, things. Like, if you remember, Louisville Vegan Jerky that we had on last week,
right.
They were involved in that. And I remember I did a show with them about a banyan tree spiced chai that was mm-hmm. selling it. So products that, you know, if you're interested, if you got a great idea about your grandma's recipe for something, and you need a company like this to bring that product to market.
Right.
And actually, Spicewood, the news here that I'm going to talk to Jeff about is very quickly that they're dissolving, along with Paul Toole, who's Jeff's partner in this, they are dissolving the Spicewood branding concept, and they're focusing all their attention on their main product, which is Balaton Whiskey.
That's because of your support and consumption, because well, you are a I fan of Balaton.
I like it, and you know, the other news that's coming out of that, they're bringing on some new products, some new alcohol products, some rums. So,
oh, Balaton is?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
And Jeff told me a little bit about that. So basically, they're putting all their focus on their own stuff rather than helping other people launch products.
That's a great problem to have. Good for them. Couldn't happen to nicer guys.
Yeah. But so, I'm anxious to hear about Kevin Grangier, right?
Kevin Grangier. So he opened his third restaurant called Kevin's Picnic, which is next door to his place, the Village Anchor in Anchorage. And it's just amazing how creative this guy is, and how even their salad bar, everything about it, it's different from me. It's not a Kroger salad bar, not to kick a Kroger salad bar around, but the finishing touches on every little bit of, you know, painting, wallpaper, seat choices. And I asked him, and he'll talk about it in the interview, how do you do three so completely diverse concepts? He said, I'm easily bored. He said, I don't think that I could ever want to do a chain, but if I did, you know, we might do another Village Anchor. So tune in to listen to this really super creative guy. He's brilliant.
So tell me, where is Kevin's Picnic in relation to the Village Anchor?
Next door.
It's next door. Okay.
Absolutely next door. It's very casual, and he'll talk about that too, but they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it used to be the Anchor Cafe, I believe it was, for a while. Okay. Anchorage Cafe is what it was. I never got out there before it closed. But anyway, great restaurateur. Have somebody to have an incredibly successful career in advertising, then hop over to restaurants and still hit him out of the park speaks a lot to his talent.
I'm anxious to hear the interview, so that'll be great.
All right, then. Stay tuned, hang with us, and listen to these fantastic folks' stories on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Sheriott,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
Today we're sitting here with Kevin Grangier, owner of the brand new Kevin's Picnic in Anchorage. How are you, brother?
I'm fabulous, short of this heat and summer weather that affects, you know, every restaurant in town.
And two restaurants on top of this. Number three.
You're this is number three. I'm a chain without the same brand.
Which is, let's mention what those are. So this is the Village Anchor in Lemoo.
Uh-huh.
Village Anchor being right across the sidewalk from Kevin's Picnic.
Yep, made sense to be here. Offering a totally different menu and different concept, different style, different process. And
so let's break that down in a couple of pieces. Mm-hmm. Why always so different from the next? And how did you decide on this one?
Well, I get bored easily. That's probably the only way to answer that question. You know, Village Anchor was my first restaurant, and it was a great challenge, you know, because of that. But once I got my arms around it, I kind of figured out, you know, what made it work, and, you know, how to attract the customer base for that style of restaurant. And when this spot came available, you know, there was a restaurant here before.
Anchorage Cafe,
it's called,
right?
Yeah, I think it was the Anchorage Cafe, but it had been closed for over a year. And I decided to, number one, rather than to allow competition right next door, and B, simply to be able to give my customer base another option that was very un-Village Anchor-like, but much more fast casual salad mm-hmm. bar, mm-hmm. a little more healthy. And this, you know, this concept, I mean, this space allowed me to do that.
And so explain that this, we've already said it's a fast casual format. Mm-hmm. What's on the menu that makes it much more healthy and light? And
well, it's a sandwich slash soup slash salad, you know, menu. So I guess that said, you can drive, you know, a sandwich from being very, very healthy to being very, very unhealthy. We have no fryers here.
Mm-hmm.
So everything from that perspective, as I would say, a little healthier than the sandwich mix at like Village Anchor or Limu or a lot of restaurants around town. You develop the sandwiches based on what I think customer demand is. Mm-hmm. And through 6 years of working at Village Anchor, we sort of have a feel for what the customer likes. What I tried to do here is develop a menu that actually complemented the Village Anchor as opposed to took away from it.
So not necessarily an opposite menu, but where the Village Anchor didn't cover bases.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Picnic steps in.
Sure. I mean, a Picnic, it's counter service. You know, it's fast casual, so mm-hmm. there are no waiters. It's got a fantastic salad bar with about 40, 45 items on it. All healthy, some local produce where we can. Some organic where we can. But it's a totally different healthy option. All homemade dressings and toppings. And then unique concept of that Picnic, I guess, accomplishes, which was sort of my idea, regardless of the brand that came out of it, was, you know, I'm a big salad bar fan. So I wanted to create an experience with a salad bar that was very different. And what happens here in this restaurant is you order the salad bar at the counter. We give you a tin bucket where you make your salad in. You can fill it all the way up or whatever you want to do. And then you can also, at the counter, you order your protein. So uh-huh. one of the things that frustrates me about salad bars is, you know, wherever, is that the proteins are never fresh.
Or, you know? And always cold, too, right?
And they're always cold. Uh-huh. And, you know, yes, they're always cold. So you don't have a lot of options with protein. So we offer shrimp, salmon, chicken, tofu, grilled pineapple. All that is made while you're making your salad. So we have about a 3-minute turn time on proteins. So while you make your salad, then you go to the pickup station, and we ask you what dressing you want, and all of our dressings are homemade. We toss the salad for you, which is a unique concept, and then we add the protein to the top in a totally different dish. So we transfer your bucket of salad to a dish and add the protein on top. So that's turned out to it is a unique concept. It's really what I was experimenting with, and it's going over very well. People love the fact that we toss the salad, we add the dressing, and then we make the proteins. That's a great price point. It's a $9, you know, salad bar with a $3 to $4 protein price.
I think it's interesting also that it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yep. And does the menu stay the same throughout the day, or do you have many changes?
Breakfast is really breakfast sandwiches and pastries, that most of which we make in house. Lunch and dinner is the exact same. We open the salad bar at 11. All the sandwiches go from basically breakfast sandwiches to more lunch and dinner friendly, you know, sandwiches, BLT, homemade chicken salad. Everything's on fresh bread. You can get 5 varieties of bread, I think, or croissants or what have you. So it's, you know, I think it's a great concept that would do well.
So how challenging has it been so far, a little over a week in, to run 3 restaurants?
Steve, not challenging at all. It's been very easy.
Said the man who had to go home and take a nap a few minutes ago.
you know, I'm learning after the third concept, and I've made this public before. I want 5 or 6 different concepts. Uh-huh. As I've just finished number 3, I'm also quickly changing my plan.
A parent who has 3 and said, no, we're not doing it.
Yeah, and decides to have, you know, unknowingly has triplets at the end. you know, as a branding guy, I love the whole process of developing the brand. And it allows me to be creative, and it allows me to execute both, you know, the left side and the right side of my brain. And the concept to date, at least, have turned out very well. So I think I have a good track record. But it is, you know, you get to a point where is it better to duplicate one of the concepts because you already have it down, or do I sort of embellish my desire to have five or six brands? And I'm at that crossroads right now. I mean, there are people who want to duplicate, you know, the Village Anchor, and I've always kind of put that on the back burner, but now I'm thinking that maybe a Village Anchor as a next restaurant might not be a bad idea.
Would that happen here or another city?
No, it would be another city. Not too far away, though. And again, this is not news. I mean, I think that having something within an hour or two distance would be feasible. At this stage of my life and my restaurant career, I don't think I'm willing to do a restaurant outside of a, you know, hour or two drive.
I would imagine. Well, it gives you, I guess, comfort
some
with
control.
Your... Right? And you probably know the customer a little bit better, too.
Yeah.
If it's in Lexington, Indy, Cincy, wherever.
Yeah, and right now, you know, both Lemieux and Village Anchor for many years have drawn people from cities that are within driving distance of Louisville. So
nice.
I know that there is a little bit of familiarity in those cities with my concepts.
So, and again, it's just the beginning of Picnic, but do you have a favorite concept of the three yet?
You know, they've all offered similar challenges. I would say favorite. Village Anchor, of course, is a favorite restaurant. People love that restaurant, and it's designed very nicely. The menu, you know, every time I try to change the menu, I just get, you know, loaded with hate mail. So as much as I want to change the menu, I have to do it very slightly and very deliberately not to, you know, upset the apple cart. Lemieux was a great concept, and that was a fun concept, but that was an animal. You know, it was an animal taking a very, very old sort of staid restaurant and making it completely different and getting people to walk in the door and go, oh my God, or wow, was really what I wanted to accomplish.
So what was it, an animal from a redesign prospect or the menu part of it?
All of the above. The old building created a lot of challenges that I wasn't expecting. I think it was built in 1984 or 83. And then just changing perception of the brand. I mean, people still, you know, always thought of it as KT's, and getting the mass consumer to recognize it's not KT's. You know, you can think that and you can visually see that, but you still think KT's. You know, when a restaurant's been around for 30 years.
It had been so long since I went to KT's that the transition was easy for me.
Yeah, but for most people, KT's in its day was a very fashionable, very popular restaurant. It's like any brand over time. People get tired of it, and, you know, I was faced with that challenge. That as a branding person, you know, that's my background, of course, I knew what I was getting into there. But it does create a layer of challenge that you really wouldn't have with building a concept from the ground up, such as Village Anchor, or even Picnic in many respects. Picnic has been a great joy to develop simply because it's so small compared to the other.
Right.
You know, I developed this restaurant in 6 weeks.
Are there even 10 staffers here? I mean,
yeah, there's probably about 14 or 15, but that's pale in comparison to the 200 at Lemieux and Village Anchor.
Oh, wow. You know? I didn't know those were that big.
Yeah. Each one's about 100 people.
All right, so last quick question.
Yeah.
So you talked publicly about a year or so ago about an Italian concept.
Yeah.
Is that still on the board?
Well, ironically, I flew in from Rome yesterday. And one of the things that I did there for 10 days is visit as many Italian restaurants and talk to restaurateurs and owners and developed a very long list of contacts and chefs. And so absolutely, that's if I choose your number four as a different concept, that's likely what that would be. Very excited. You know, I love Italian food. I love Italy. I have a passion for just that particular concept. And, you know, when I create a concept, it rarely is because it just is something I want to do. It's because the location makes sense.
Right.
And I can pull everything together and then I visualize. You know, that's what happened with Lemieux. It was, I looked at it and I said, this needs to be a steak restaurant. So I'm looking for that place that can be an Italian restaurant, but I'm so excited because, A, I feel like there's an opportunity here in Louisville to develop a really great, not that there aren't great Italian restaurants here,
right.
There are,
right.
But the concept that I want to do, which I think is very different than others, I think there's room for it. So I'm excited about developing that.
Well, perhaps that'll be our next podcast interview with you when you open that one.
I hope so. I hope we'll have to plan months in advance because it'll be so busy.
Kevin Grandier, thanks for being on Eat Drink Talk.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. And good luck. I'm episode 15.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
All right. Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
And today we're in the Louisville.am studios with Jeff Stumm. And Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rick. Good to be here.
Well, this is an odd story we've got here. You're coming on to talk about a business that you're dissolving in the very near future.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. I think
most people come on and talk to promote their businesses.
We may have done this wrong. This is a three-year endeavor that actually has given birth to something new. And it's a little bit by design.
Okay.
But, announcing this a tad prematurely, but effective October-ish, certainly by January 1, Spicewood Branding, which is a company that Paul Toole and I founded 3 years ago, will likely cease to exist.
Okay. And because people don't know generally what Spicewood Branding is, but they do know some of the brands that you've been involved with. You said some 15 brands over the last several years?
We've consulted or worked with entrepreneurs in the startup food and beverage world. And then also a really cool project where I worked with a doctor at University of Louisville Medical Center with a pain patch. It was called Earth Blends.
Oh, wow.
Kind of got her up and running. That was actually our first consulting gig, Hong Yi.
Wow. She was one of the guests on the Rusty Satellite Show.
I think I remember that. Yeah. Really interesting project. I learned a lot about some natural medicines that combine themselves with science and whatnot. But our real comfort zone has been in non-alcoholic beverages, foodstuffs, and alcoholic beverages. And over the last 3 years, we've done about 15 separate consulting gigs, whether it be with micro distilleries or local, hyper-local startup food brands.
I know. I think my favorite was that Banyan chai tea that I was still hoping there would be some in the back that would be delivered to my house, but it didn't happen.
And that, that oddly enough, it's kind of weird from a consulting standpoint. That's one of the products that I was most proud to be associated with, because we worked with Sam and Amy Patel to develop that from scratch. The branding, the flavors of the brand, the whole nine yards, and we got it into nice distribution. But it became very clear to Sam and Amy that who are hoteliers by trade, that this is a tough business. And unfortunately, they decided to pull the plug on that after 1 year in, as opposed to doubling, tripling, quadrupling down, which is what I did on Ruby Red Tea when I started. So.
Right. And you go back to Ruby Red Tea, which let's get an update on that product. You're no longer associated with it.
That's right. I've been gone for about 3 years, about the same time that we started Spicewood Branding. Literally started that brand from scratch as I was exiting Brown-Forman. I tried to develop an alcohol tea beverage like Firefly Vodka, something like that. Mm-hmm. That evolved quickly into a non-alcoholic tea brand, and had a ball getting that off the ground, doing farmers market work and building it up regionally and then nationally. And as I left, we had that brand. I had that brand in national distribution through national distributors in 6 of 8 divisions of Whole Foods, in the Fresh Market, and in Kroger. And my joke was, I remember exiting, that a clown car of monkeys could manage this brand from here. And the sad truth is, it's much easier to kill a brand than it is to start it. And the brand's kind of resetting itself and starting from scratch. The last year and a half, there was an interim CEO in place. And today I just met with the, 90-day-old CEO, David Salmon, who's now putting his team in place with a new package and really relaunching the brand. Hopefully you'll start seeing some stuff in media about that soon.
Wow. Well, I've always been fascinated since I met you several years ago when you were doing the tea. And just with the challenge that exists for an entrepreneur, even if you got the greatest product in the world and the greatest advertising strategy, it's hard to get something to market.
It really is, and I have to admit, I came from Brown-Forman, so I was I was above that. You know, I could just make this work, no problem. And quickly I found out that that was not the fact with Ruby Red Tea. And over the years, there were all kinds of different challenges, you know, whether it was scaling up, whether it was dealing with business partners, dealing with investors, dealing with the day-to-day running of a business. It's thankless. I mean, any entrepreneur you'll talk to will talk about the sleepless nights and the long days and the toll that takes on you and your family. And I felt as if when we started Spicewood Branding, I could bring a really interesting kind of a long-term perspective to that and coach entrepreneurs through that, those peaks and valleys.
Okay.
And it's as much about what not to do as it is what to do.
Sure. Well, what's a big mistake then? What did people do?
In my case, the biggest mistake I made with Ruby was growing too fast. And a lot of that had to do with expectations set forth by investors. I probably should have managed those expectations better. And especially with our lead investor, you know, the projections were a little bit out of reach, and I knew that. And instead of being bold, and which I would do now, I would be bold and say, this isn't right. Let's do this the correct way. Let's go after the business in a healthy way. I ran and got nationwide distribution, which created the need for more capital and more investors. So working towards a plan that is not terribly realistic and not necessarily the right plan,
sure,
is definitely something I encourage entrepreneurs to look at.
Well, let's talk about some of these brands that are existing now. I mean, Spicewood is exiting, so these great entrepreneurs you've brought along to whatever point they are, they're going to have to figure something else.
Yeah, and we're not going to leave them high and dry. There are some great, I mean, they're bigger distributors. I want to make really clear that the whole point of Spicewood distributing was to be able to leverage the opportunity that we had with new brands. So instead of trying to find a distributor for a startup brand, we act as that distributor. So our universe of accounts was only ever, it still is, you know, approximately 50 accounts. And it's the things here locally, like you would think, Honey Brothers and Rainbow Blossom. But we did get authorized as a Whole Food distributor. We distribute all the way over to Jungle Gyms in Cincinnati and Good Foods Co-op in Lexington. But,
and what products, just for
well,
our Bandy audience?
Tree Chai, Louisville Vegan Jerky, Butchertown Soda.
Featured last week on this show. The Vegan Jerky is a great deal.
And you can talk about an entrepreneur who's been through the ups and downs of the food truck world and throwing dough at Diorio's so he could figure out what to do with himself, and has stumbled into what I think will be the next great brand that comes out of food brand that comes out of Louisville. I think his brand can be on par very soon, someday, with Bourbon Barrel Foods as a recognizable, iconic Louisville brand. I really do.
Wow.
And then Butchertown Soda, we're very good friends with the folks at Copper and Kings, doing their stuff for them. Sweetgrass Granola, folks in Lexington, outside of Lexington, that are growing their own ingredients, doing everything in-house, working their butts off. Some of the sweetest people you've been, raising their kids along the way. You know, they in particular have a great brand proposition with a new product they've developed, and could use an immense amount of help from somebody as we hand their distribution off. You know, they, if I were in a perfect world where I could afford to do this pro bono, I would help every entrepreneur I can.
Well, there you go. Well, we talked about this, the end of Spicewood Branding, but you're not. I think you're younger than me. You're not retiring, are you?
No. not financially able, nor will my wife allow me to even think about sitting around the house. That's just not good for any of us.
Play golf.
The golf game needs improvement. We've got kids at home in the whole nine yards, you know, who've helped us along the way, too. I'm really proud of, most recently, my 16-year-old son is working the farmer's market like we used to. I mean, he's watched us do this. He's got an entrepreneurial spirit at heart. He's 16 years old, and that has been a fun process for all of our whole family. But it's time to move forward on something, and that's, you know, more or less, I think, one of the reasons that we're having this conversation is, you know, Spicewood Branding flew way under the radar. It was more about the brands than it was about us. It never was about Spicewood Branding. But this three-year endeavor allowed for my business partner, Paul Toole, and I to begin work on our own spirits brands. And for reference sake, Paul and I, along with Kirsten Holly, who's still at Brown-Forman, we ran the Southern Comfort brand for 4 years and did exceptional work there. It was the last time Southern Comfort actually had a positive trend was the year we left. Not that we had all to do with that and the time and place and whatnot. But for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, we've been working on Ballast and Chocolate Whiskey, which you've talked about a lot, thankfully, and thank you for that. But it is now very apparent that this brand has national scope. After launching 6 markets this calendar year, we've been running really hard. In that process, we've also decided we can't do a great service to the clients that we're distributing. So we're going to pull away from Spicewood branding.
Because really, you're going to you want to take care of your baby first, right?
Well, you know, and that's part of it. You know, very frankly, Spicewood branding, as long as we had consulting gigs rolling in, was profitable. As a distribution entity, given the small universe and the small number of accounts, and small number of brands, which was by design, it's a break-even proposition, and it's time for us to spend our time, energy, and effort on stuff that's going to make us money.
Okay. So, and I understand. We know all about Ballantine and the four flavors and how you've gotten into a lot of different states. There's more product coming behind it.
We actually have, there's a total of about 5 products that we either have gotten past ideation stage, all the way up to pre-launch stage. And Ballantine has been our focus because it was the first brand that we launched. But one of the things that I guess Paul and I both have is the ability to observe marketplace from afar and understand marketing trends, especially in this particular case in flavored whiskeys. And we have the nimbleness to be able to say, what if we put a little bit of thought, time, and energy into branding around a specific category or niche within a category? Even though rum is extraordinarily cluttered, there's also some nuance behind the scenes as it relates to distributor levels, layers. There's been this big Bacardi shift. We feel like there's room for a nice flavored rum, a really cool okay. update on a tropical but very specific type of rum, and some
Jeff
other
is being
too.
Coy with us, yes. Ladies and gentlemen. So
can't give it all.
I really want to know what it is, but okay, go ahead.
And then some other little things, you know. So we at the end of the day, we hope that we have a portfolio of products that we have created from scratch that we own outright. When we are going to be looking for investors in the very short future, anybody,
me too.
Anybody, yeah, all of us, everybody that I know. But we've got about 5 products that. 2 in ideation, 2 that we could launch, I'd say within 120 days once we pull the trigger on it, and Ballantine, which we're going to launch another 4 states before October. So that'll put us in 10 states this calendar year, and that's work.
That's a lot of work.
That's work, yeah.
but it's good work to have. I've heard you talk about getting into states, but once you get into the liquor store in whatever, North Carolina, wherever you are, you know, how do you get people to buy it?
It's shockingly difficult, you know, and that's probably another naivete I had as it related to Ruby Red Tea years ago. I picked up some distributors and thought, well, heck, I've got it made now, and then probably got discontinued by some local distributors. I mean, here's a for example. We finally got into the big liquor store in Nashville, Frugal McDougal's. Anybody who's ever shopped for liquor in Nashville knows Frugal McDougal's. They begrudgingly put us in because we were the new brand. We agreed to do demos, which is just standing in the store talking to customers. Yeah. And they, you know, their customer count is immense, you know, 200 or 300 people in a 3-hour period of time. So I did one on Thursday when I was down there. We hired a brand ambassador, did one on Friday. She could not do one on Saturday, so I drove back to Nashville and did a 3-hour demo on Saturday. But we sold them out of product. We sold something like 10 cases over that span. And so, I mean, case in point is that. So you have to invest in, you know, both push and pull techniques. You have to invest in discounting to get it into the store, incentives for the distributors to sell it, and then you have to work with bartenders and retailers to help them get it off the shelf right. or off the back bar.
No easy task to sell a product at retail and especially in this industry. So, Jeff, I got to wrap it up here. Congratulations, I guess, on discontinuing your business and starting a new one. We'll look forward to hearing about your new brands and what's going on with
them. I do appreciate it, Rick. It's always good talking to you.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.